Disclaimer. The views and opinions that you hear expressed by the participants in this show are not the views of AnimeNewsNetwork.com. The show tapes live most Thursdays, 5:30 p.m. Pacific Time on YouTube. Check out my Twitter feed, ANNZAC, for more. Enjoy the show! Hey everybody, welcome to ANNCAST. I'm Zach Birchie. Jacob's here.
Hey folks.
How's it going, man?
Pretty good. So much anime, it's coming out of my nose, ears, and mouth. I wake up in the morning and I'm like sneezing, sort of like swollen from I think is allergies, and it's like, no, I think that's extra anime. It's like there's too much anime and it's trying to leave my system.
Yeah, there's a lot of it, man. There's a lot. It's a big season. You and I are unbelievably busy, I would say. Yeah. Like, unbelievably busy right now. But it's the spring season. We never really got that much of a chance to wrap up winter, though, so I feel like we should talk about that stuff first.
Sure.
Yeah. So, from winter, if you remember anything about...
Yeah.
Winter
hasn't
at this
been washed
point.
Away.
And, yeah, it hasn't been totally just washed out of your system yet. What in your opinion wound up being like the strongest thing? From I mean, we did an article on this, but like,
right,
what do you think?
I mean, not counting my brain, not counting Rakugo Shinju, which is sort of its own thing. It's like just the second half to a thing that people were freaking out about over a year ago, which is I think why maybe there was less discussion around it, because it's just the happy part of like a dramatically tragic story that like that was over a year ago. So this is just sort of like all the denouement from that and all the like climaxes from that. But
right.
So putting that to the side, I guess, is sort of its own discussion, you know, maybe talk about the whole series at some later point. Scum's Wish was really, I thought, the best of the season. But it's a divisive one. Like it is like, you know, we have the list of like the rankings of shows from the whole season, and it kind of hung out at like number 8, number 10, because it is because the people who like it really like it, and the people who don't like it really don't like it.
Yeah.
But traffic wise, it was a gainer. Like it went from a couple people reading it to like very high traffic episode reviews, because it is very discussable in a season that was full of like pretty light stuff. But yeah, in the end, I think I came down really hard on, gosh, Scum's Wish was really good. So yeah, that was the one that stuck out the most to me, I think.
That's cool. I didn't get a chance to finish any of the stuff I was watching. Mm-hmm. Voluntarily in some cases. In some cases, I just didn't have time. I did intend to keep watching Tanya the Evil, the show that I love to bring up on this podcast.
Yeah.
But I never got to it. We went to Japan, and then my schedule just got crazy. And then, so I kept reading our reviews, mm-hmm. which told me, you know, most of what I needed to know. And it was like, so apparently, like, that show comes to, like, a philosophical conclusion for Tanya specifically about, like, his ideas about management and like,
it,
you know, oh, you can't
itself.
Like, yeah, you can't sit like Tanya was right, but also kind of wrong. And then like Tanya realizes that and then delivers this like bombast, another stupid ass
over the top speech,
bullshit, like fascist jack off speech.
Mm-hmm.
And like, and a boring one too. Like it's meant to be all shocking and edgy. Like I'm going to cut God into pieces. Like, fuck,
I mean,
you're trying so hard.
Like, I will say, like,
all I hear is insecurity.
You were right, yeah. No, you were right the first time. Like, it's not fascist. It takes place in a fascist setting, but the message is not necessarily fascist so much as it is, like, the Grand Guignol thing that you were mentioning, where it's like, oh, humanity is doomed and watch it wallow. And Tanya is, like, his great realization is realizing that humanity is doomed, and his mistake the first time was not factoring that into his calculations of human behavior to allow himself to survive and to prosper, because he, like, all he did was feel bad about how dumb everybody is, and he should have embraced the show's theme, if you can say that it even has one, is that he should have embraced how dumb people are and used that to make better strategies. And that's right. What it seems like the show is forcing itself to make some kind of thematic point, because the original material doesn't really have one. It's just, I really like this weaponry, let me talk to you in detail about how it is used. Like, that's, it doesn't really have a theme per se. So, you know.
Well, the thing that always gets me is that what the show is ultimately about was, like, you know, here's someone who feels like they are ultimately, like, a rational person guided solely by logic. They are, as a computer, they only make rational, logical decisions, mm-hmm. which is a bullshit, self-aggrandizing fucking myth. Human yes. beings do not operate as computers. There are human beings who like to tell you that their emotional responses to things are that's the definition of logic and ration. So in other words, right. my emotional reactions to things, I've decided that they are logical and rational, mm-hmm. and therefore I will explain to you, well, so don't you see the logical reaction to this is whatever my fucking stupid emotional reaction to it was.
Right.
And yeah, I can condescend to you and make you feel like I am objective. My emotional reactions are objectively superior to yours, mm-hmm. more efficient, more effective, whatever it is. But it's just a bunch of self-serving bullshit. Like, and if the character's like, well, I'm logical all the time, but I have to account for other people's emotional reactions.
Yeah.
And it's like,
that's the
you still don't fucking get it. And right. the other, like, you look at the list, like, Tanya's a long light novel, like, it goes for a while.
Yeah.
I have no idea if that thing is ever gonna get to any kind of salient fucking point, or if it's just gonna be, you know, fascist jack-off, whatever.
I think it's just the guy who wrote it is just interested in an excuse for remaking World War II from a different perspective and tweaking things, adding magic, and, like, I think that's just the only thing he's interested in. And so, yeah, to trying to give it a thematic point, which the anime just sort of half-heartedly kind of sort of tries to, is not really, it's beyond the point. It's like, why are you bothering? The premise leads you to think maybe it's gonna have something to say, but it's just not what the show's about. It's just not in the interest of trying to say anything.
I guess not. That's sadly kind of it. I didn't get to Scum. I watched like 4 episodes of Scum's Wish. It was good.
It's
I read your reviews. Those were good.
It's not a
I liked
marathon.
Your reviews.
I'm glad you like them. It's not a marathon. Or like you get through one and it's like, oh,
yeah,
jeez, you know, like it's a lot of heavy emotions. So, you know,
yeah. So winter's done though. Like it's we've already blown past it. It's
yeah.
over.
Mm-hmm.
About those shows
yeah.
until the end of the year.
Well, the only other thing I wanted to say that people will probably be like, why didn't you mention this, is yes, Miss Kobayashi's Maid Dragon is the show that like got, I think, more people over here anyway. In Japan, it's selling Shruggo, whatever. But over here, like, it seems to be the one that has gotten more people to, rather than just like the KyoAni, people who watch every KyoAni thing and talk about KyoAni a lot. It's gotten, like, a wider berth of people to go, this is really great, and I'm glad KyoAni made it because it was really well animated. But, yeah, Dragon Maid is my favorite KyoAni show now, absolutely hands down, the best one I think they've ever made. And it was really good and sweet and touching and cute and funny, and you should definitely watch it, even if you're not, like, a KyoAni person, I would say.
I didn't think it was funny.
You saw the first episode, you didn't see the ones after that. There were people who were saying, whatever, I understand that, but I'm just saying, like, you may notice from our
you are
reviewers,
not even going to remember that show existed by like August.
I am. I'm sincere. I really liked that show.
No, I'm just teasing you. Yeah, I'm sure. Bounced off it really hard. I was like, mm-hmm. yeah, I get it.
Mm-hmm.
It's not particularly funny to me. I don't know. I didn't take to it.
Right.
Are you telling me that?
All I'm saying is our reviewers and our audience and people in general, I could tell like there is a niche for KyoAni. This blossomed outside of that, kind of like Free did, which is not that common, and that's all I'm saying, is like, oh, this was special, and it kind of verged outside of the KyoAni core base, which is small but very vocal.
I'm giving you a hard time. I don't doubt that. I realize I'd have to watch probably 3 or 4 more of them to really get it, mm-hmm. but I just don't see myself ever getting to it. Like, I bounced
fine.
Off
I was
pretty
just
hard.
Talking about memorable things. I think that one sticks out.
Totally, yeah. There were a lot of people talking about that.
Mm-hmm.
Definitely. I just totally didn't react to it. I don't know why. All right, man. Spring mm-hmm. happened.
Mm-hmm.
like 2 weeks ago. Spring started.
God.
It was a pretty big Saturday. There was Attack on Titan. There was My Hero Academia. There was Grand Blue Fantasy. Yeah. You know, that Blue Fantasy commercial is there.
Yeah.
I watched Attack on Titan. I didn't watch the entire first season.
So you probably lost.
But, I know, like, if you're in my line of work and you don't know what happens in the first season of Attack on Titan, I don't know what to tell you. But I know enough to kind of pick up, you know, what was going on. And mostly I just wanted to see the animation. Because it's really well animated. Like, that show looks great now.
Well, that scene, like, you don't need context, but spoilers, I guess, at the beginning of season two, but that scene where Miki gets eaten is pretty fucked up.
Yeah, it's pretty messed up.
Oh, my God. Like, I read that part in the... I'm not caught up on the comics by any means, but, like, I'd read that far in the comics, and it was just kind of another death, and that guy's not an important character. He's physically strong, but he's not really important to the story, so it's supposed to be like, oh... They got the toughest guy, I guess, rather than liking his personality. But it wasn't that super memorable in the manga. It was just like, oh, this Titan can talk. That's different. And sorry, Miki. But in the anime, they turned it into something special. Like, the Beast Titan was really scary and, like, kind of calm and, like, enunciative. And, it gave him a personality that was, like, disturbing. And then the way that they directed that guy's death was really good. Like, I continue to assert that the manga is good and the story is good, but in terms of... You know, Isayami's drawing skills and pacing skills, the anime really makes that story better. Isayama himself has said this. He's like, I'm glad that I get to work so closely with the anime team to go like, oh, I want to change how I did this the first time, and I want to change the tone, or I want to add a scene that he did in the first season, and now for the second season, he's like, yeah, they make my story better, and I enjoy that. Which is, you know, cool, because that's certainly the way I feel. Like, they're taking... Basically, what are his storyboards for a really strong piece of writing and giving it, like, sort of a cinematic volume, I guess.
Yeah. I might go back and, like, sit and watch the first season, but I don't know. I might just watch the second season. It's entertaining. I know what's going on, so maybe I'll just watch that.
I love the spoilers.
I didn't watch My Hero Academia, which a lot of people were disappointed in because it was mostly recap, right?
Yeah.
Like, the traffic for that day was, like, Attack on Titan, and then, like, also My Hero Academia. Like, also in terms of excitement and stuff, like, which isn't really what I was expecting, but that kind of leveled off. Last weekend, it felt like they were on an even keel, and, like, in our poll, which is running right now, I don't know if it'll still be... Actually, it probably won't be going by the time this is,
it'll be down.
By the time the MP3 is up, this won't be... It probably won't still be going, but... The poll is going right now, and, like, those two are, like, within 5 votes of each other.
No, not anymore. They
That poll goes real... So
it goes real fast.
Just so people know what we're talking about, we have a poll on the site that helps us determine which shows we cover for our daily streaming reviews. Daily streaming is we cover the entire season, and we cover that show every week, just like, you know, someone writes up Better Call Saul every week. We write up anime every week. We have a big poll... That helps us, gives us an idea of what the audience wants us to cover, and we pretty much use that as, not as a Bible, but definitely as a very strong guide. And then we make editorial decisions, and then it's based on what the writers themselves tell us they want to do. Uh-huh. But that poll moves pretty quick. It gets a couple of thousand votes or so, usually within an hour or two. And the poll firms up pretty early on. So, like, the order is generally the order. It changes a little bit, but the vote totals can shift as it goes on. So, yeah.
So what I was going to say, basically, when the poll was so this is the impressive part. I will go ahead and say the number. When the poll was about 700 votes or so, up to that point, like, from the point it was at 0 votes to 700 votes, so I was keeping an eye on it, and Attack on Titan and My Hero Academia were always within about 3 votes of each other, every time. 3 votes, 2 votes, 1 vote, up to 700 votes. That never happens! They're just dead heat that entire time. It was crazy. But that is not the case anymore. Now that the poll is up into thousands of votes, the gap between Attack on Titan and My Hero Academia is much wider. It's, like, a couple hundred.
What's ahead?
Attack on Titan.
Well, don't say it like that.
No, it's... I mean, one's a mainstream hit.
Look, I know
hit,
one
one's
is...
One's a mainstream hit, and one is a very popular thing with anime fans. Like, it is not... My Hero Academia stayed in the anime bubble.
It's just because it hasn't aired on TV. I don't think it's aired on TV yet, has it? Did it air already?
Is See, I don't know either. This is the problem. Yeah. But having watched both of them and followed them both very closely, like My Hero Academia, it's fun, but it really conforms so hard to Shonen Jump stuff. Not that that can't be, like, Naruto was obviously a breakout hit, but it conforms so hard to Shonen Jump stuff in a way that I think holds it back from the mainstream. Like, it treats superheroes in a way that is not particularly Western. Actually, it's really, really anime for 10-year-old kind of...
Chat's right. Saying it hasn't been on Toonami yet. Why don't we revisit this discussion after it's been on American television?
But you're absolutely
Because I bet
right.
you people will buy into that color palette hard.
No, it's a good, it's a popular show. I'm just saying, when I'm talking about this stuff, I'm not talking about, it's not popular. I'm talking about very few things ever are as popular as, say, Attack on Titan, Fullmetal Alchemist, Death Note. Like, those are rare, weird breakout hits.
Yeah. I know you are making perfect sense to me. I totally get what you're saying. I'm mostly just joking around. So the thing is that after that, I honestly, I have not even had time to contribute to the preview guide, mostly because I'm putting together our next preview guide, but also because we have all this other shit to do. So in the last couple days, I sat down and watched as many as I could get to, which was seven total. I got to seven of them. Do you want me to just go down my list and, then you can tell us about all the other stuff?
Yeah, sure. Yeah,
okay. Because you watched absolutely everything.
Everything.
Right, and reviewed most of it.
Everything.
You should read Jacob's reviews. They're good.
And everybody else's.
And everyone else's. They're all good.
The preview guide.
Okay, what did I watch? I watched Berserk season... I only watched episode 13, mm-hmm. Where Griffith shows up again. And he's like, hey, motherfuckers.
What
bet
up?
Bet you didn't think I was coming back. And Griffith is there. Guts
Wait,
is
look
like,
at all these people I killed.
Well I didn't see that coming. Hey, yeah. The intro has all this beautiful 2D animation in it that looks gorgeous. And hey, it's the Berserk anime I always wanted. And then it immediately just fucking smash dolls. Cuts to those CG dolls.
Valley of the Dolls.
Reboot-ass dolls. Uh-huh. Fucking smacking into each other, clipping through things. God, that show looks bad. People were saying it's an improvement.
It is. I
How?
Know. The episode after that is less dolls.
Okay, so is the one dolls. After that? But isn't the one after it's that still, have the fucking eclipse in it?
No.
Is the eclipse in this one? They talk about it.
Yeah, they flash back to it occasionally, but the eclipse happened forever ago. Griffith came back from he came back from hell. Basically, eclipse happened. Griffith is in hell, waiting to be reborn into a human body.
I thought they were going to flashback to it more because they were kind of talking about
it
like
enough.
They were talking about it like you guys got to tell me about what happened, and then
basically Rickett was out of the loop, and nobody's told him because just why would you tell him? But so they tell him in this one, sort of.
But they don't.
Yeah. But why bother bringing Rickett into... Rickett's not going
to
do anything.
I'm not sitting here saying that I'm dying to see the fucking eclipse animated for the fourth time or whatever.
Yeah, we're now in a place where Guts and the people and the new characters that he's encountered are routinely fighting just, horrible, giant, nasty-ass sex demons. Rickett can't do anything.
That's Berserk.
Rickett can't do... the time for the Golden Age where they were mostly just fighting people and they were employed by, the king and stuff like that is done. Rickett is not... part of this story anymore. He can't fight giant sex demons. He's 12. So, he stays with the little girl in the cabin.
Yeah, I don't know, man. I'm not going to keep watching that show. I want the Blu-ray version to be available, which everyone says has good animation, and they
it's improved. I don't know if it's good. There's more 2D, right?
So. Yeah, but that's all I want.
Right.
That's all I want. If the episode is 60% 2D, 40% garbage CG instead of the other way around.
Yeah.
Sure. Mm-hmm. That's probably the best I'm going to get, right?
Right.
You know?
Yeah, no, I'm following it, just keeping with it, because it's might as well experience it this way.
The note I have written down was, still looks like a Dreamcast game.
It does. Looks like shit. It's just, it looks less like shit than it did. And so, I watched the first season and eventually went, they're trying. So this is they keep trying, they keep making it slightly better. The story is still great, so...
Yeah, that's the thing.
Biting.
It is still in a really... good. The script is a great adaptation of that material.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's really solid. And the way it's cut and everything edited is good, too.
Gross ending grossing.
It's always got to be this monkey's paw shit. Yeah. Oh, you want Berserk TV anime? Yeah, well-directed, well-written. They're like, is that all? And you're like, well, that's all I can think of right now. Okay. And the monkey's paw closes. And you're like,
it's like, well,
wait,
the first
I forgot to ask.
The first one wasn't well-animated either, so we can deal with bad animation.
Yeah, but
first... can you deal with bad CG
animation? No. I can handle the shitty Berserk 90s animation. Right. Maybe it's just because I'm used to shitty 90s
animation. No, a still image held on for 5 seconds is still better than a CG doll body flopping around.
That's... Yeah, I'm with you, man. Boruto was, like, shockingly good and entertaining.
Right.
And, like, wow, I'm not gonna watch this.
Right. But it is, it feels like a new thing, right?
Yeah, it feels like a new thing. It seems, like, as good as Naruto was at the beginning of Naruto. And, like, reminded me of those early episodes of Naruto and, like, how fun they were. And, you know, how easily drawn into that world you can get. Although it weirds me out, like, how similar to Japan the Hidden Leaf Village is. Like, it... Naruto... Okay. All right, let's see if you see what I'm... See what you see what I'm saying here. There's times in Japanese popular entertainment when I look for the class line and see, like, how does their entertainment portray them, their characters? So, in other words, are anime characters typically portrayed as, like, middle class or, like... What's normal? Because they all seem to have these, like, two-story, like, Tokyo houses. Like, a house, right? Naruto portrays this... Like, Naruto is... In America, would be an upper-class house in an upper-class neighborhood, and they would be portrayed as sort of a... Well, a normal family. Like, a normal...
Well, I mean, he's the son of, like, the guy who saved the world, so...
I know, it's just the verisimilitude between the Naruto, like... Here is a standardized presentation of normal, sort of wealthy family, like, but no attention is drawn to their actual, like, how much money they make or anything, but it is presented as here's normal life, and it is this portrayal of kind of a suburban, I don't know, it's something about it that kind of bugs me. Like, I'm watching the show about ninjas, but here's a scene from an episode of, like, Full House.
Right.
You know? And, like, Boruto kind of has that, where, like, the kids are fighting, and mom's reminding them, like, oh, but you're this way, and your sister's that way, and it's, like, right out of a family sitcom, and, like, this is family entertainment in Japan.
Yeah.
So
well,
you
I'm
get,
not,
like, a glimpse...
That's the reason I can never get through Naruto, is because it's a little more sitcom-y than some Shonen Jump.
Here's the comparison I want to make. Uh-huh. Sometimes sitting there watching Boruto makes me feel like I'm sitting there watching, like, I don't know, what's a family, like, Modern Family.
Yeah.
Like that. Like suddenly I'm watching this super thing that's on at 7:30 p.m. on ABC.
A lot of ass, yeah.
Yeah, except like there's like fight like family friendly fight scenes and stuff, but that's really what it feels like, and that is the audience in Japan. Like it's a super mainstream property. So kind of weirds me out. But gorgeous animation and I could not care less about the story.
It occurred to me earlier, like, that it's basically doing the same thing as Dragon Ball Super, where it's like some other person is now writing this property and the original author is basically taking a break but looking over to make sure it, like, follows what they want, and it's a sequel. And it's the same thing, only if Dragon Ball Super wasn't, like, minimally animated.
Yeah.
Because they animated the shit out of Boruto, and it looks great.
Yeah.
That's but, still... You know.
It's not Piero. Is it Piero?
It's Piero. Yeah. They just like waited.
I don't expect that of Piero. I'm sorry.
They're gonna slow down. It's gonna look like butt in like 30 episodes.
Okay.
But for now, they're like
it'll look great at
come
the beginning.
Come back to the fold. We know you stopped watching 4 years ago, but come back.
Yeah.
You know.
The chat points out that Hinata's family is supposed to be one of the richer clans in the village. Okay,
he married into money, and
okay.
He's the hero who saved
that
the
makes
world.
A little more sense,
right?
Because I did feel like the show was conscious about that stuff, mm-hmm. about how it portrayed. Somebody's means.
Well, I know. So he's Boruto is again son of the most powerful ninja, not powerful, but like most influential. He's the Hokage or whatever, influential ninja in the area who married into money, and then he immediately makes friends with the son of a CEO who's like the head of the.
I noticed
tech
that, and then it was like upper class kids
like,
hanging
oh, so they're
around.
Already
like
rich as
fucking
fuck.
Privileged ass rich kids.
They're rich ninjas,
and they're ninja. Like whose fantasy is this?
Rich ninjas.
Whose fantasy is it?
Yeah.
That's what I want to know. Anyway, it was really, really spectacular. Like, really well animated, charming, great color, just a just a wonderful production that I will never watch another episode of.
No, I didn't even get through the first. I just saw clips because I was like, I couldn't care less about Naruto. I watched 10 episodes of the original series. That is all I know about Naruto.
Boruto's like specific frustration, though, is like, I don't get to kill anyone. Which is
what?
Kind of, yeah. Like he wants an enemy.
That
he complains there's no enemies to fight.
Oh, I don't think
there's no enemies to fight. There's no enemy anymore.
People don't. Naruto didn't murder.
What does he think's gonna happen, Jacob? Did anyone tell him about the grim realities of war? He wants an enemy to fight.
Well, Naruto didn't kill anybody, right? Isn't that, he no killing?
So here was the question I had: how much death was there? Was character plenty?
There
were
lots
death
of death
in Naruto,
it all,
but it wasn't
it was
handled.
All,
there was no like. I don't think there was a lot of casual death. Not a lot of, like, minion death?
Yeah.
Was there a lot of minion
there
death?
There was, apparently.
Were they robots or people?
There was a lot of minion death. There's a lot of off-screen death, so I only know this from reading reviews Amy writes weekly about Naruto, so and I read all those, even though I've never seen, like, a wink of Shippuden. I've read what happens, and, like, there's a lot of off-screen minion death, and Sasuke kills a bunch of people.
Yeah, well, we know that, because he has to be tragic and dark
right, but
and
I think
tortured.
I think Naruto never kills a person. I don't think Naruto ever kills anybody, but maybe he does, but I don't think he, for the most part, ever kills anyone.
So, yeah. Well,
he probably would have told his son, now son, don't go doing any killings.
Thousands die in the war.
Yeah.
On screen. So, well, anyway.
Off screen death, assuming.
Boruto thirsting for blood is what I'm saying.
Yes.
Let's see, what did I watch after that? Arrow Manga Sensei. Why did I watch that? I knew what that was.
You knew that was a snake when you picked it up.
Yeah.
I the thing that jumps out to me about Arrow Manga Sensei, and I wrote this in the previous one.
Man, that script is so fucking dumb.
Yeah. It's
they spend like 10 minutes going like, well, you're stupid, big brother. And he's like, but I just want to be friends for like, that's like 10 minutes of
well,
that episode.
To me, it's justice for Oriemo because it's like he wrote Oriemo again, but worse. And I remember back when Oriemo came out.
Is it the same author?
Yes.
What?
Yes. Why is that baffling to you? He's writing his fetish again.
He wrote the same fucking show.
Yeah,
like,
but
it's
with
the
a worse
same
character.
Thing.
With a worse character somehow.
But like, it's kind of the same. Like, she's still just an asshole.
Yeah, but she's a different kind of asshole. She's an introverted asshole instead of an extroverted asshole. So she's worse. But, like,
yo,
it was,
the show is not for me. Yet.
No, I mean,
like, I liked the animation. Like, that guy's, well, yeah. That guy's shit gets, like, really top-shelf adaptations. Like, fuck,
yeah,
that show
well, he's
looks
the
good.
He's the king of the little sister stuff, but his time, or he was, but his time has kind of passed, so it's kind of weird. It's like they're trying to make Oriemo, again, right down to every aspect of the production design and everything, but, like, Oriemo hit at a time when it hit, and I think now it's kind of lapsed, and people are, like, looking at it differently, and the reactions to that show from our readers and from our reviewers were for me cathartic because as somebody who sat through all the praise for Umo and going, it's not subversive. Shut up! I was so angry that people were calling it subversive, and now I feel like yes, like everybody's just like, oh yeah, fuck this, and I'm like, yes, it's not subversive.
I remember when that final OVA episode, like, streamed, and everyone was watching it live at the same time. I was at a convention when it happened, and Twitter was just like,
what? Yeah.
It was like a bunch of people like, this show's subversive. Like, it was like the final moment for those guys. Yeah. Like, proving whether or not the show was, like, actually subversive or whatever. And then he gets up there and yells,
incest
for the win.
For the win.
Yeah, and everyone's like, what?
And then they get fake married and kiss right on the mouth, which I found that screen cap for my review and put it in there just like, kissing right
hey,
on the
remember
mouth.
Or-Elmo? Or-Elmo.
Anyway, yeah, you knew that was a snake when you picked it up, so I'm
I
not
did.
Sure.
I just wanted to know.
Right.
You just get curious. There's another one in here like that.
Right.
No, I was just kind of surprised at how stupid, like, how dumb and bad, and I'm not, I hate to do that because it just sounds, it's such
Oriemo
a, hang on, let me
dumb.
Finish, so it's just, like, really crappy criticism, is just saying it's dumb and bad, and then you don't have anything else to say. Like, the script struck me as being incredibly simplistic to the point where, like, they know you're there for this interaction between the brother and the sister, and you can kind of feel the writer got to this point and then hesitated because he didn't really know how to make them interact. Mm-hmm. And, like, that comes across in the show.
Yeah.
And, like, the dialogue is so it's really stilted, and they're repeating themselves, and they're repeating an interaction over and over again to the point where you're sitting there going, even if I were jacking off to this, move on! Like, holy shit.
Yeah.
And they play the brother character as a, the brother character is portrayed as a total creep who wants to fuck her.
Yeah.
That is the way they play it.
Yeah. Or emo, it is weird. Like, it's
isn't
like,
he supposed to, like, not want it? Like, Tenshi, like, yeah, like, well, he's supposed to do that shit?
I mean, that's not...
Make us feel like he's not just a
that's not the way Ori emo is. But, like, yeah, absolutely. Like, it's... It, weirdly, it's like, let me just remake Ori emo and let me change things arbitrarily so it's different is how it kind of went. And weirdly, like, the stuff that he changed is the stuff that, like, made Ori emo more tolerable. Not good, but, like, he just changed things to make it worse, basically. To make it different, but worse. And so, yeah, it's just, or emo, but worse. You know, like, you had it right the first time. Do something else, dude.
Yeah.
Not right. You didn't have it right the first time. You had it right enough that it was less bad than this.
Yeah, dude. I don't know, man. It was no good. Let's talk about Recreators, which everyone got really excited about.
Mm-hmm.
It's okay. I didn't think it was like I like the premise and the execution is like super good, but it felt like the first 20 minutes of a movie.
Mm-hmm.
Like okay, what?
Yeah, you're really not sure where. I think people are more excited because they know who's writing it. They're familiar with the guy who wrote Black Lagoon. You know,
Okay, so what should we expect? Like, I didn't watch all of Black Lagoon.
Shameless fun, some smart character writing. It's not like deep. He's not interested in being deep, but think a little Helsing-ish, I guess, only not as gross. So just
what? I didn't get that vibe at all.
Well, no, not in terms of Black Lagoon is not fantastical per se. It's grounded more in the real world to some extent, but in terms of the way the characters interact, which is they genuinely like each other, but there's a lot of like crass over the top. Shameless weird otaku wish fulfillment and stuff like that, but it's not gross, it's trying to shock you, I guess, like Roberta the weird blood maid in Black Lagoon and things like that, and it's just it's trying to be over the top violent fun, I guess, which I'm not sure that Recreators is going to go that route per se, but I expect it to basically, instead of devolving into, oh, I have to learn how to cook for the boy I'm living with, and I came out of a fantasy novel, which I would expect most things to go that way. I don't expect...
Yeah, if she starts making him sandwiches, I'm out.
Right, yeah. But I expect this to instead be like, here is how the fantasy world that I came of has shaped my worldview, and I'm not going to get into it in a deep sense, but I'm going to use it to like, as a bedrock for how much I kick ass in this action scene, and it's going to basically, like... For instance, the villain that shows up, who is a ridiculous villain who has a rifle that she bows like a violin with a sword. And that seems stupid. It seems like a dumb thing that would be in a light novel. And I think that he captured that 100% on the nose by creating that villain. Because it's like, oh, that is a dumb villain from a light novel. But it's not completely thoughtless, because he's like, oh, she's interested in... She talks completely in music metaphors. She's doing the Razaphon thing where she compares, like... the stability of the world to tuning an instrument and shit like that.
Yeah.
So it's like,
been there, done that.
Right. So it's not, well, it's not like deep or complex, but it is like, oh, this is a cohesive character choice that's, you know, just kind of meant to give you a complete picture of who this person is. Now here's a bunch of action scenes.
Right.
You know, so it's just fun, crisp, goofy writing.
My favorite moment in it was when, it was the characterization of the main lady. Her characterization was really good. Mm-hmm. I felt like they did a really good job putting together somebody who was very very smart, very competent, grounded, like down to earth, capable of taking the situation and reacts to it emotionally, but has her shit together.
Mm-hmm.
And I found the way she talks to the main character and everything is really like, I understand. Mm-hmm. You don't have to keep explaining this to me. I've got it. Mm-hmm. Like, I think I understand this. And the way that the character speaks is like, it's just, I thought it was excellent characterization, and the performance was like super good. Like the voice acting was really natural, like really good. Like, and fluctuating between, here's what I'm saying as part of this light novel universe, and here's how I'm reacting as a human being to what's happening.
Mm-hmm.
That was really the tone thing that the show totally nailed. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, there's just nothing for me to hang on to, so I need to see more of it.
Yeah.
But I'd be curious to see if it totally eats shit or if it actually is good. That'd be
yeah,
cool.
No, absolutely.
If it's actually good, because it doesn't need to be like, I don't want it to be like light novels are bad. I don't want it to be like that. And it totally seems like it's found the
happy medium,
the tripwire to walk mm-hmm. between, you know, too critical and not critical enough.
Yeah.
That's like an impossible task to keep that up for even more, 12 episodes, however long it's going to be.
It's more like light novels are kind of dumb and shallow, but we love them for a reason, is more the tone that the show is going for. And they sell for a reason. And, the thing about the characterization you mentioned, that's the other thing. I guess that's the reason the comparison Helsing came up, is like Helsing and Black Lagoon are like total nerd boy wish fulfillment, but they don't write like shitty female characters or shitty characters in general. Like everybody loves like guys and girls like love Integra and Saris and it's the same thing. Everybody loves Revy and Balalaika and Roberta. Like people love those characters from Black Lagoon because he's not writing like weird shitty wish fulfillment ladies. He's writing them in the same way that Kota Hirano would write his ladies, even though it is wish fulfillment, and they are definitely serving you fan service and stuff like that.
They have interior lives and their own motivations for doing things. Like, Saris is a pretty well-written character.
Right, and so, but everybody loves Revy. She is a great character. It's just, you know, it's a little more Hollywood than Otaku, where it's like, okay, yeah, this is absolutely meant for, you know, a 23-year-old guy to go to the movie and go, guns, not women, but it's like more respectful about the characters.
Did you say guns, not women?
Guns and hot women.
Oh.
Guns, not women.
Guns and not women is a different... well, there's anime for that. There's guns and not women. Guns and women. Guns who are women.
Yeah.
Every possible variation on that has been done.
So, yeah, I don't know where Recreators is going to go. It helps to know the person who's writing. Because it's not an Aldno Zero, where it's like, who is this writer? Oh, a bad one, I see. You know, which was what happened with Aldno Zero. But Aoki, I trust his direction. I trust the guy who wrote Black Lagoon to give me something fun. So I'm all in for Recreators. It suddenly gets
boring. There were some good jokes in there, too. Some decent fish out of water jokes.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they're fish out of water jokes, but it matters in how they're executed, not...
We have barely gotten any story. It was all action for 20 minutes, basically.
Totally, yeah. So, like I said, need to see more. Okay, then I watched something called Akashic Record of Bastard...
Why did you watch these things? Why are these the things we're discussing? Could have watched Grimoire of Zero or Suka.
So those were on my list. I didn't get to them. Mm-hmm. I had a list.
These were more important.
The list had an order. I was like, all right, I'll watch that. I thought I would have more time today, but I had to do some shit. Interviews with
Akashic Records.
Interviews. There's like a whole bunch of interviews going up. Next week is a result of the work that I did today, so it's good.
I just didn't
have time to
my
preparation.
How you're like, well, I have to get to the incest show.
I better get to Ero Manga Sensei and the show everyone else hated. This is a light novel show about a magic school, and let's talk about the next show.
It's
ripping off like GTO kind of. There's a dickhead who teaches at the school, and the girl
The school uniforms look like porn outfits.
Yeah, the school uniforms look like bad porno.
Stripper outfit, yeah,
like 80s. Like
they have the straps that go up the.
Yeah, which is
that's stupid. Why would you?
It's not sexy. That's like you have spats on your body. Like it's not sexy. I don't understand. Yeah, I guess like there's like an arms race for like what kind of sexy lingerie style accoutrement can we put on a school uniform outfit? Right. And like if you like pulled it out of the hat was like sort of the like straps,
suspenders.
Like spats and suspenders, you got fucked.
Yeah.
That show is just as stupid as it sounds like the script as Ero Manga Sensei and just as dumb as the script.
Yeah, Ero Manga Sensei at least looks nice.
Yeah,
and is directed
this one
better.
Does not.
This is just like directed poorly. It's animated like shit. It's just a series of bad light novel gimmicks where it's like, oh, I guess I haven't tried combining this gimmick and this gimmick. Maybe this will make.
Yeah,
it
which
good.
Is what it kind of is now. It's just like a big like they have a thing with balls in it and they roll it, a ball comes out and it's like, all right. He's self-aware about the genre and also hates himself. All right, and sci-fi where only women are still alive. Okay, those two.
Yeah.
Like, there you go. That's probably a light novel to anime for next August.
Yeah.
The thing that struck me about it, I was sitting there watching, and the jokes are like, someone says, like, I hear he's a big bastard. And someone else says, more like a big dummy. And then it cuts to commercial. And you just like... Why am terrible. I fucking watching this? Like,
why were you fucking watching this?
Well, I don't know, man. Well, you're right. Anyway.
That was I think, the lowest grade that I gave to... No,
you gave, like, a non-score to Aeromaga Sensei.
Yeah, which is... Well, that's arguably its own thing. I think maybe Armed Girls Machiavellism I gave a 1, but...
So the next show on my list was called Armed Girls Machiavellism.
God damn it!
I didn't watch that.
Good.
The one I really wanted to see was Grimoire of Zero. And the Suka Suka thing, just because it looked... But that's not... That's like a harem thing, too, right?
No.
Isn't it?
It is a girls are gonna
die. Is this what they're fighting about in the forums right now?
They are fighting about whether it's a harem, and it's like, it's not, guys. Jeez. It has a lot of female
characters. So you fall on the side of not a harem. Because when I skipped to the end of the episode, it was one dude and a bunch of cooing ladies, and I was like, oh, gross.
No, they're little girls. It's not... And they're not romantic interests.
Well...
It's an orphanage. He's guarding an orphanage. He's guarding an orphanage,
uh-huh,
and there's one love interest. There's two grown love interests, and he is guarding an orphanage of little girls that are not love interests. They are just an orphan.
Four episodes of Interview with Monster Girls later.
Well, Interviews with Monster Girls didn't go creepy. It didn't.
We spent, like, at least three episodes.
We were talking about how it was tripping the line, but it did not, like...
It ultimately didn't.
It was basically, the male lead was unimpeachable, but the decision to write all the girls as having a crush on him was completely unwarranted and didn't add anything. It was bad. So, you know, that was the issue with Interviews with Monster Girls.
All right, don't watch Bastard Magic Instructor. Last thing that I got to was called Sakura Quest. Mm-hmm. Turo Bako, or whatever you want to call it.
Turo Bako. Country Bako.
So it's the character design. It's character designer from Shiro Bako.
I don't know.
Right?
If it's not, then fuck.
It's like the team, right? I think it's the same.
The shot where they had the same, like, five girls cast, only they changed their hair and stuff, I started laughing really hard.
Yeah.
I was like, oh my god. But yeah.
Who doesn't, like... I don't know, man. Mm-hmm. Who wouldn't want more of that? Who wouldn't want more Shiro Bako? Mm-hmm. It seems fine to me. It's very sort of Fox Searchlight. It's kind of like, mm-hmm, here's a small town. This girl from the big city is gonna make a go of it as a. She was sort of accidentally assigned to be this town's queen, mm-hmm, which is a tourism effort, sort of a tourism revitalization effort by the government. And they have funds to bring people out and revitalize their tourism efforts. And they have a sort of a shrine built to the Chupacabra out there, which. The subtitles didn't really, I don't know, did they pick up on the Chupacabra thing?
Yeah, it's just spelled differently.
Yeah, it was spelled a little differently.
They made it up. Basically, the joke is that, as a lot of little towns do when they're trying to attract tourism, that they made up a legend and said it was theirs, and the joke is obviously, okay, so they've stolen the Chupacabra.
Oh, I
and
see.
And they've changed the spelling and said, oh, it's from here.
It's from here, okay.
And that's the joke.
You know, if you're going to get away with ripping off a Latin American legend, you could probably do it in Japan pretty okay.
Well, they do ask, I have watched actually the second episode of that one, they do ask frequently, like, what is it? And they're like, it's a thing that drinks the blood of goats.
Okay.
Like, they're not sure.
It was pretty good. The show's beautifully animated and pretty interesting. And basically, so this girl sort of reluctantly takes on the role of revitalizing this town's tourism. Mm-hmm. And that was the end of the first episode. So you watched the second one. Mm-hmm. I didn't react that strongly to it other than, like, oh, I would totally watch this on, like, and I probably will, like, watch this on, like, a Sunday afternoon.
Right. I didn't dislike it, but I actually didn't really like it very much. I felt it was kind of hollow. I was like,
yeah, that was
this
kinda...
is was the problem to me. The thing that jumped out to me, the issue was, okay, it's beautifully animated, it's paced very well, it's nicely directed, but I felt like all of the characters were, I'm eccentric, and the main character didn't really, her personality was contradictory. It was like she was either, like, really on top of it in terms of, like, knew exactly how to help the town or whatever, or totally, like, screw this, I don't want to live here, I'm not helping you. And it was like, oh, so her personality is plot convenience, like, that's her personality. And everybody else was like, I'm a wacky backwoods eccentric, and there wasn't really more to it, it was just like, here is my quirk.
Yeah, it was a town full of character actors.
Town full of character actors, and I was like, This is some Doc Hollywood that I have seen many times before, and they needed to give it a little more heart and soul. Like, people comparing Shirobako and Hanasaku Uroha, Shirobako is filled with, like, personalities that are very familiar to people that are, like, know anything about the industry or are anime fans themselves. Hanasaku Uroha was definitely fully fleshed out characters pretty early on, and there's an injection of drama very early on. This was, like, all lighthearted comedy. It's not like, haha, it's, like, cute comedy. They don't try for drama really right away, but so everybody's trait is just like, oh, I'm an eccentric. And it's like, this is a little bit lacking in, this is a little bit lacking in soul, I guess. It's felt like it was maybe looking for its heart and hadn't found it yet. I was like looking for the heart and I couldn't see it. And
yeah,
we'll see.
I will probably watch that show. It goes down smooth. Mm-hmm.
It's really easy to watch.
Yeah, it's pretty. I like the way that looks, even if it's not the same character designer. I really love that Shirobako character designer, and it's if it's not him, it's close enough to his.
Right, they're imitating
their stuff. So yeah, super good.
Somebody points out in the chat that the reason that they stole the Chupacabra is that the town is known for farming turnips, which are cabra in.
Okay.
So that's why they're like, oh, right. the Chupacabra, he sucks the blood from turnips, and that's why.
How clever.
Uh-huh.
Right. Yeah, anyway, so that was good. So that's what I saw. What did I miss that I should definitely see?
Mm. So,
help me out
here. Rage of Bahamut, you never saw season one, so I'm not sure about that. But that was...
Virgin Soul. Look it up on Amazon.
it's gonna fuck up your recommendations. But, like, it's really entertaining. It's, So the reason it's called Virgin Soul is that the main character. So I know you didn't watch the first season, but if you remember kind of the basic premise, it was like roguish Han Solo type who has like the design of LeFou with muscles for some reason. But either way, it was. Do you remember he had like orange afro and it was like you don't look like the protagonist.
He didn't
of this.
Look like LeFou.
He a little bit he buff.
It was LeFou. Like an Usopp kind of character design.
Yeah, Usopp. My point is
LeFou
he looks,
is like a potato guy.
I said
these
buff.
Guys are like lanky.
I said buff. Like, he's very muscular. However, like, I'm my point
you
is...
You just went left field with that LeFou thing. You should have just left it out.
Bully's sidekick. He looks okay. Like a bully's sidekick in a show was my
he's
point.
He's the one who says, hey, fuck him up, man!
Yes. Yeah. And not the protagonist. But his personality was, I'm the Han Solo character. And the love interest, the girl that he's helping out is, like, whimsical, dancing on the Lee's Disney princess. I want to find my mother, and I eat a lot of food, and I have the Ariel. She's there. We go. So Han Solo and Ariel is the.
I saw like a bunch of the first episode, like right. Not the whole thing, but it was obvious they're riffing on Disney the whole time.
Yeah, and so I guess basically what happens is this sequel takes place in the future, and it's not like they could have ever had a child, but for some reason the protagonist in this. Acts like as if she was the child of those two characters. So it's obviously you're supposed to think that. You're supposed to be like, how can this be? What happened? Because it's not possible if you've seen the first season. But what happens when you combine Han Solo and Ariel, apparently, is you get an extremely horny Disney princess. And so that is the gist of the
entire
first
episode. Yeah, I've seen this. Thirsty ass princess.
Really funny. Where she's working hard to make money to send back to her impoverished village, which is impoverished because Bahamut happened in the first season and, you know, raised most of the country to the ground. But she can't really get a whole lot of work done because absolutely all the time she's thinking about hot boys. And it's very entertaining. And the whole thing is told through, like, action sequences. There's no, like, info dumps or anything like that. It's just really smart, fun, clever action. And there's a lot of clues where you're like, what's going on? Because it's been 10 years since the first season in the story. And there's, like, stuff that's different and seems odd or wrong. Like, demons have been forced into slavery as a result of
right.
Muhammad. And so it's like, oh, okay, so there's something sinister going on. But it was just a really good setup. Like, of all the premieres I watched, it was the most, like, tightly written and well-directed and, like a Hollywood movie, basically. And not that the Hollywood movie is better than, like, slice of life type thing. It's just, like, it's hard to get that right. And they got it really pitch-perfect well, so.
Yeah.
That
you just don't see it very often, that's all.
It was tremendously entertaining. It was really good. So there's that, and Grimoire of Zero you never got to. I liked it. I think most people like Suka-Suka more. I did not. So
Suka-Suka is guy at the end of the world taking care of android kids?
No, we don't know how, but we know they're biological weapons.
Something like that.
Yeah. Well, to me, so Suka-Suka is pretty. It has really good music. It has really good background design. It has nicer animation than Grimoire Zero. Grimoire Zero kind of looks dumpier. It doesn't look bad. It just looks very mediocre. But Suka-Suka, like, even though it looks pretty, all of the writing is like info dumping.
Hmm.
All of it is like, here's how the world
It's got
works,
a complex premise. So.
Yeah, well, I guess there were other ways to tell the story. It's all just like, as you know, and it is guy taking care of girls who are obviously going to be used as like magical or biological weapons. So it's like, it's like, okay, this is building me up to a tearjerker. And that was less interesting to me, I guess. It's okay. It's intriguing. I'm definitely going to watch more. But if I had to compare the two, which it's very easy to go, oh, let's compare these two. Grimoire of Zero, I liked more. It's more basic. The writing is much better because it's like Spice and Wolf and Chaika, the Coffin Princess.
Hmm.
Both of those shows were technically light novels, and there is like definitely a bedrock of generic fantasy, but with some little quirks to try and make it unique going on. But the whole thing is just told in the chemistry between two characters. Chaika, you know, you have Chaika and her thief bodyguard, and then Spice and Wolf, you have Spice and Wolf. This is a giant tiger man and a witch, and normally witches hunt tiger men, but she wants to use him as her bodyguard to protect her and going to look for the grimoire that's very important to her. And in return, she's going to make him human. Because some tiger men can come from every once in a while due to an old witch's curse. People give birth to weird animal babies. And so he's always been a tiger person, but, like, you know, it's been hard for him, and he lost his parents. They tried to protect him and, you know, shit like that. And they got murdered because of course. And so he wants to be a normal person, so he's going to help her on this quest, but they don't get along too well. And that's what it is. It's just the rapport between giant white tiger boy and snarky little witch girl. And it's like, yeah, I like it. It's just straightforward. It's easy to understand. The characters are, like, not complicated, but very compelling. There's a really nice little emotional moment between them in the first episode. So I liked it more than Suka-Suka, even though the premise is more generic, but the storytelling was just better.
Hmm.
So, it didn't look as pretty. Like, the animation's better in Suka-Suka, but, yeah. I would say just watch both if you like light novels that aren't bad, you know.
I'll sample them both, I'm sure.
Mm-hmm.
They both look kind of interesting. Well, was there anything else?
I mean, yeah, but Eccentric Family's back. Show is a thing. That's a sequel, so I don't know. The rest of the stuff, like, there's certainly interesting things there, but it's, I don't know, I think we talked about the most, like, immediately compelling stuff, so. But this season is the most loaded with interest and content I think we've ever had, period, in terms of the number of things that people are interested in, seem to have an audience. Number of things that seem to have a significant audience is the biggest season I've seen so far.
Yeah, cool.
Which is good. It's good for the industry.
Chad asks if I watched Love Tyrant. Nope.
It's sort of a
clicked
navigating
on different bad ones.
Yeah.
Wait, is that one bad?
It's Shruggo. It's irritating. Like it's a frantic, manic, Nabashinish comedy. So you would hate it. You would hate it.
Nope.
But it's not terrible.
Check, please.
It's just, yeah. It's not terrible. It's thoroughly mediocre.
Kado. What about that one?
It
got good reviews. Like, everyone said, like, I don't know about this because it's CG for most of it, but...
It's...
You liked it.
Yeah. I actually liked it. I liked it, and I liked it less than most of our critics. Most of our critics gave it a higher score than I did, and I liked it. So it's... the writing is, like, procedural. It's... The premise is, what if Arrival, starring Amy Adams, was, like, not dour? It was, like, a little bit... The tone was a little bit more like NBC show with, you know, like, a ragtag group of, like, bureaucrats and...
Procedural.
Yeah, procedural. And everybody got along okay. And, like, the Arrival aspect is not, like, clearly this is going to go bad, but it's negotiating with the aliens. But it is, like, clearly aimed at adults, and it's... Yeah, it's like a primetime adult show, which is, but it just happens to be CG animated. And the CG is not great, but it is way better than any other previous effort I've seen. I'm able to look at it and not want to die, which is a first for TV anime cel-shaded CG. So, yeah, I'm going to keep up with that one, and hopefully it doesn't start looking worse. But I'm like, oh, I can look at this. That's nice. But yeah, it's a perfectly nice, like, primetime adult procedural thing that happens to be about making first contact, I guess.
All right. Cool. Yeah. I don't think I'm going to. I mean, the CG is a big turnoff.
Yeah.
I'll read the reviews, I think. Mm-hmm. And if it's, you know, high quality enough, maybe I'll check it out. I don't know. If everyone's like, this writing is amazing, then I'll definitely.
I get the feeling it's not going to be. It doesn't seem particularly.
If it's ambitious. A procedural, then they're not probably.
It's
not
ambitious, yeah. It's pleasant, but not ambitious, I would say.
Okay, we got a bunch of Twitter questions, so we should get to those. And we'll also take questions from the chat here in a little bit. Let's see here. From Sean Lowe. Interested in your opinion of the thematic direction Tanya went in. Did you find it satisfying? Well, like I said, I didn't watch it, but the answer to your question is no. I did not find it satisfying.
No.
There is no way that show would have probably satisfied me thematically at all, but I was hoping it would do something a little bit more interesting than what it did. Okay, Branko Bergson wants to know about how you felt about the way Rakugo Shinju wrapped up.
I liked it. I liked it a lot. There is a big speed bump at the end.
Man.
That scene, you can take it out completely, and you can take it out completely and it doesn't change the story, which is a good problem to have, I guess. If you're going to have a bad scene, it's the kind that doesn't really mess with anything. And also, like, I feel okay about it because I can clearly tell, looking outside into the writer's perspective and why did they put that there, I can tell 100% where it came from, which is result of a first draft that she just couldn't let go. Like, she should have killed this darling when it was a different story a couple years ago, and she didn't. Like, it's very clearly like, oh, this came from that first draft, because thematically, it makes sense with the way this story started, but in concrete terms, it doesn't work anymore with the characters as they were developed. That's the issue. So, I was like, well, it's not that upsetting. It's just like, this should have been taken out, but it's not that bad.
Yeah. Yeah, it's kind of sucks whenever there's something like that happens in, like, this otherwise, you know, totally great show that's the only thing anyone talks about for, like, a year.
Right.
And then it's like, whoa, now we can talk, like, a couple years from now, you'll be able to talk about Rakugo Shinju, and you'll have to, that's the thing, in that conversation, it will always come up, and you'll always have to get over that before you can, but there will always be this asterisk.
Yeah, which is a shame, because otherwise, like, it's basically flawless. I will say, like, I was pleasantly surprised that most people's reaction, the reviewers, like, it dominated the best of list that our reviewers wrote. Like, it didn't seem to really affect things for most of our staff or most of the viewers, because it remained, like, number one throughout the entire season. So, yeah, it certainly wasn't enough of a speed bump to, like, make people feel sour on the show. They were just like, I wish that wasn't in there, but it's pretty easy to ignore. Because it is literally brought up as an implication that is never confirmed. So you can see it that way, an implication that is just meant to give somebody a mysterious air, but if it was confirmed, would be creepy and terrible, so just, you know, assume it didn't happen, you know.
Also from Branko Bergson, did your name perform in the U.S. the way you expected? I mean, sure, like, they didn't open it on that many screens.
Yeah.
I don't know exactly how many markets it was, but it wasn't, like, a super wide release. I mean, I saw a lot of advertisement for it at my local theaters around here, but a lot of those are independently owned, and yeah, I mean, it did, like, what, 1.6 million, something like that. You know, that's good.
Yeah,
that's good.
For that limited release.
For that kind of a limited release, yeah, that's good. I don't know why they didn't put a little bit more muscle behind it. I don't know why those decisions were made. I don't have any particular insight into why they decided to go with that kind of a limited release. Personally, I feel like, you know, and look, they do a ton of research and I'm sure have all this figured out, so I don't know, they know, but in my opinion, that movie could have opened bigger or just normally, like, you could have just opened it normally.
Yeah, that's the biggest thing. I was like, why wasn't this in, like, wider release?
Yeah, that's closer what it kind of, like, felt like to me.
Closer to, like, that Frieza Dragon Ball movie.
Yeah, like Dragon Ball.
Like, yeah.
I don't know. Yeah, whatever. I think that opening has a lot to do with how they opened it. I feel like it could have maybe done a little bit better, but what you gonna do? Yeah. Jeff Tabbitz wants to know, on a scale of 1 to Cross Age, how bad was Handshakers? Did you watch the whole thing?
Yep.
And you're giving me shit for watching one episode of
Handshakers
things?
Handshakers was
legendary. You watched all of Handshakers.
It was legendarily bad, I will say that. So we make jokes about, in our weekly rankings of viewer rankings of shows and how high or low, how much they did or didn't enjoy them. We make jokes about the Chaos Dragon spot, which is, Chaos Dragon was on the bottom of the cumulative rankings for its entire run. It stayed in the bottom. So now if anything stays in the bottom the whole season, we call it the Chaos Dragon. However, Chaos Dragon, this Handshakers out Chaos Dragon to Chaos Dragon, because even Chaos Dragon wasn't at the bottom every individual week. So there's a difference between cumulative is like overall tabulating every episode altogether. Where does it rank against the other shows? Weekly is like just this individual episode compared to literally 27 or 28 other individual episodes of the other shows each week. Handshakers was Chaos Dragon, you know, went up and down a little bit. Handshakers stayed on the bottom every week. It was dead last, and by every measure, it's created a record that actually can't be broken. It can only be matched by any other show. So I guess now the Chaos Dragon spot is the Handshaker spot. But to answer the question, Crossange is a viler show? I mean, like, it's more... It makes me feel worse and grosser and, like, it's bad. Handshakers is just a dumb bad. Handshakers is just incompetent bad, which is very different. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So, you know,
I know the difference.
They're incomparable types of bad. Handshakers just makes me go, oh, you. Crossange makes me sad and sick. Mm.
Okay, Josh Carpenter wants to know, are anime strike shows generating less traffic than their Crunchyroll counterparts? I'm curious what the early signs are for Amazon. If you mean like in the preview guide, or do you mean like on, I have no way of knowing, and no one will ever know what Amazon's traffic stats are. I don't think it's deniable that more people watch anime on Crunchyroll, and the result, the shows being on Anime Strike limits their audience significantly, at least in terms of people watching it legally.
Yes.
So I have no way of knowing. I know that fewer people are watching those shows. To me, that's just common sense. That's
right.
Just stands to reason. But it's also not particularly my concern. It's of interest to me, but it's not something I need to, like, you know.
Well, we were worried at first with, like, back when Cabinary aired, it definitely hurt the traffic for Cabinary in terms of who was reading stuff about it and stuff like that. But over time, it evened out. And now, like I said, Scumswish, that was Amazon only, and that was really good traffic for us. Whereas something like Onihei, not so much, but we knew it wasn't going to be. That's not related to Amazon. That's just because it's Onihei. And it doesn't really have that much of an audience. But so I think for us personally, the traffic, whether Amazon hosts it or not, isn't impacted. But for whether people are watching that legally or not is a completely different issue. And I'm sure there are more people watching it illegally if it is on Amazon exclusive. Not good, but I'm pretty sure that is the case.
Our review traffic for Scumswish was great.
Right.
It was up there with the other top shows of the season. So, you know, it was up there with, it did, like, you know, not like Yuri on Ice, but it did great traffic.
Right.
So, you know, people are still reading the reviews. Mm-hmm. They didn't read reviews of, like, any of their other shows. Onihei was, like, at the very, very
bottom.
Well,
they only had, like, one or two others. And in the past, so The Great Passage, they didn't simulcast, so we don't know. Battery was never going to do great traffic, and Cabinary was should have and didn't, but that was when they just jumped into it, and they didn't simulcast Cabinary very well. They were late many days,
yeah.
and it was new, and it was, people didn't know where to find it, and it was different. Now that people have gotten used to it, it's not as much of a problem.
Okay, also from Josh Carpenter, any thoughts on Persona 5, if you've had time to play it, and the localization controversy? Well, I only have limited thoughts on Persona 5 because I've only played about 2 hours of it. I streamed some Persona.
You're going to the gulag.
Yeah, no, I streamed the stuff that you can stream in Persona. That's actually all I've played of it. It's okay. It's good. It's intriguing. I need to, obviously, that's not... If you played 2 hours of a Persona game, you have not played it at all. So I need to put more time into it. I am still playing Nier Automata, which is a masterpiece so far, and way it has my attention. And Persona, I'm sure, is good, but it just doesn't have my attention right now. And then I was going to play this other game called Hollow Knight. I don't know. We'll see. I don't know. Persona's sitting there. I've got it. It might be
so
a summertime.
Right
it might be, yeah. It's a crazy time for video games.
I'm still playing Breath of the Wild because I don't
play. You don't play that many video games.
Exactly. But I also don't play video games as often. So if I get into one, like, I just marinate on it for months, like a little bit at a time. So, because I just don't play games as much. So.
Yeah. The localization controversy. So, I mean, that looked like a lot of machine translation and pinch hitting and stuff where they were using people rushing a little bit. I mean, I don't so long as I can understand what is happening, I am not that picky, and I do prefer broken English to memes and snark. I have been watching things translated from Japanese into English for most of my adult life, a majority of the time. I have seen every possible style of subtitles. I know what I like, I know what I don't like, I know what I can tolerate, I know what I can't tolerate, I know what bugs me, what doesn't, I know what is a translation that gives me an idea of what the show is actually about versus a translation that's totally useless. What's in Persona 5 is the kind that is like, okay, I can get, this is fine, I can get what they're saying. Boy, it would be nice if this had some extra polish on it, but I get what's going on here. The reaction to all, like, game translation accuracy has become an annoying internet fucking bullshit machine like everything else, so I don't like to throw my hat into that ring too much because you might attract, like, weird zealots and stuff like that, but, the outrage over it seemed totally fucking absurd to me. Like, totally ridiculous. I have no problem with some... It's not... Like, they should go in and clean it up now that people noticed it and there's so much outrage, but... Whoa! Man, people get so fucking mad. Pestum Zaku wants to know, given the recent success of Kimono Friends, where do you personally draw the line when it comes to shows using bad forms of 3D animation? Berserk, I guess. Like, I'm willing to... Like, I guess that's the line. Like, I want it to be less than half crappy CG. Mm-hmm. I can tolerate almost half the show being crappy CG, but not the whole thing. Mm-hmm. I don't know. What do you think, Jacob?
It's case by case, because, like, in terms of just looking at it, if Berserk was fully CG and there was no hand-drawn and it wasn't the story that it is, which is a really good story, I wouldn't, absolutely would not be able to sit through it at all. Convert, like, stuff like Ajin, where the story is, like, at least decent, and it's all fully 3D CG, and the CG looks the way it does in Ajin, I can't sit through it. I tried for, like, 5 minutes, and I couldn't do it with Ajin. I was like, this looks awful, I can't look at this.
Yeah, Ajin looks really bad.
Same thing, I'm like, I can't look at this, it's terrible. But, like, Kato, they got it down just enough to where I'm okay to sit through it. And also, Expelled from Paradise, that movie does not look good. It looks quite bad. It's not as bad as a lot of the TV stuff, because it was made on a movie budget, but it looks quite bad. But I'm willing to sit through it because the story is good. So it really is just about the right balance between is the writing enough to overcome how bad this looks. And if it doesn't happen to look as bad, like Kato doesn't, I'm able to tolerate more, like, writing, which Kato has so far. So it's just a balance between how compelling is the story and how much does it hurt my eyes to look at it.
Yeah, I don't know. We'll see. Hopefully advances in technology will make better and better looking crappy CG. Kaoru Fan wants to know, will Netflix ever realize that most people who are interested in anime want to watch shows weekly and not after the season's already over? I mean, look, man, I don't know what to tell you. Like, Netflix is in a situation where they don't have to do nothing for anybody. Like, they are telling you that, hey, Little Witch Academia, you're going to watch it all at once when we say,
yep,
welcome to fucking...
I really hoped that they would put it up by now, because it's like the
2017. Yeah.
But it hasn't gone up yet.
No, they're going to put it all up at once, like next year or some shit. Like, maybe this year, probably not this year.
I'm sad.
We're spoiled.
I wanted to see it.
We are spoiled.
I know.
I'm not saying it's not, like, make a big outcry. Make Netflix notice that you want it week to week. Make them somehow notice that you want it week to week and somehow convince them that this is better or better for their bottom line than what they're currently doing. Mm-hmm. That's what you would have to do. Right. But they don't have to give a shit at all.
No,
they
Netflix,
do not.
They do not have to give a single shit.
They do not care. Mm-hmm. Or not that they don't care. I have no idea whether or not they care. But I guarantee you their people have looked at the whole situation and determined this is what we want to do.
At least they didn't take anything good from this season. They took a really bad-looking 3D CG idol thing nobody wants. They took that. It's called ID Zero.
Maybe it's super good. You don't even know.
I looked at the PV and I couldn't look at it, even if the story was good.
Yeah, well.
So it was like, oh yeah, go ahead. You take that Netflix. You take that. You keep that close to your chest.
Yellow Redfield wants to know if Nier is the best, the true best anime of the season. I mean, in my opinion, yes. Like, the story in that game is fucking amazing. God, it's so good. It's so good.
I haven't played it.
It's so good and interesting and unique. Oh, that game is so amazing. I'm very impressed with it. It's kind of incredible that that came out like this, a week or two after Zelda. Like, two just... It's not two of the best games I think I've played in, like... A decade. Ugh, one right after the other.
It's only anime that's coming out of my face.
Amazing, yeah. That actually kind of does it. Oh, wait, we got one more. Sean Mercer wants to know if the Naruto line is now the Boruto line. So the Naruto line is part of the poll. It's a weird thing because it's not. It is not accurate to the traffic that our... Gesundheit. It's not accurate to the traffic that our reviews get. The Naruto reviews do extremely well. But not that many people vote for it in the poll. I think a lot of people just assume that it's going to get in, or
engaged,
the people who read the Naruto reviews are not necessarily engaged with the polls on our site. So they always do really well, but the Naruto line was about 15% of the vote. About 15% of the vote would vote for Naruto. Everything beneath that 15%, mm-hmm. we can basically cut at will. Like, we don't need to worry about that having too much audience interest to the point where we are missing something if we don't include it. Mm-hmm. The question was whether or not that would now become the Boruto line. And right. In the most recent poll, Boruto is at the top because it's brand new and people are voting it in and they want to make sure it gets blah, 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 blah. Uh-huh. It may fall down. However, One Piece has just taken over the...
One Piece is just... Naruto and One Piece
slotted right into the Naruto
they
line.
They were kissing cousins, so now that Naruto has fluttered away, One Piece is like holding the gate, basically.
Yeah.
He's like the angel in front of the Garden of
Eden. But the One Piece reviews do great.
You know.
They do great.
Uh-huh.
So...
But because of its position, we can judge, like, beneath One Piece, there's, these are the guys who aren't getting back into the Garden of Eden.
All right, we got time for some questions from the chat. Josh Caleb wants to know, do you ever wish you weren't so tired or experienced with anime tropes and genres? I mean, sure, I mean, everyone would want to experience things for the first time all over again, but I feel like it just changes your perspective to where you're just looking for those things. Like, everyone goes through a period where they're just tired of cliche all the time. I feel like once you get a little bit older, a little wiser, you sort of start thinking about things in terms of, well, the only thing that really matters is the execution. Mm-hmm. You can take these old things and do them over and over and over again, and that's because people love them and they work. But there has to be something interesting. Doesn't even have to be unique. It just has to be interesting.
Uh-huh.
That's it. That's all we're looking for. Uh-huh. So we sound jaded a lot of times and cynical, I'm sure, because we dismiss a lot of stuff, but we watch a lot of stuff.
40 first episodes. If we liked them all, I don't even
know.
Yeah,
but
I like 12 of them. Isn't that enough?
Do anything for a long time and you will not be as blindly enthusiastic for it as you once were. And I don't think that there's a good or a bad to any of these. It is a spectrum that you fall along as you age through a fandom. There's a period in your life where you're like X and you want the people that you read to be like X, and then there's a period where you're going to be like Y, and then maybe we're a little more like Y, so you appreciate what we're doing a little bit more. I've been doing this for a very, very, very long time, long enough to know those patterns and see how that goes.
Uh-huh.
And like, it is I'm comfortable with where I am, and then there are readers who want that from me, and that's what I provide. Mm-hmm. So that's kind of how I feel about it. I don't feel like there's a, like, you're dumb or something if you're a little less quick to dismiss something based on its cliches or its tropes. That's great, but I'm a little bit more dismissive of stuff based on whether or not it's doing anything that interests me, mm-hmm. and I have been doing it a long time. So I think that pretty much sums it up. What about you?
I wouldn't want to like take back my experiences and be like fresh-eyed to anime per se. I feel like I enjoy the stuff that I enjoy more for the experiences that I've had, where it's like, okay, I know how hard it is to make something original or to make something, like, to execute something well with this premise, and so I appreciate it more compared to, like, more the mediocre stuff, because I can see how much it stands out for what it tries to do more. And, I mean, like, I don't have time in the day to, like, breathlessly get excited about 40 things. I have time in my day to get breathlessly excited about 7 things, you know?
Yeah.
And so I don't, I'm perfectly happy with the amount of, like, picky that I am. I enjoy lots of things, so I don't feel like I'm ever, I always feel like I'm watching too much anime. I don't, you know, like, It's not like, oh, if only I enjoyed more things. I enjoy enough. I enjoy plenty. So
yeah,
and I get vicarious enjoyment out of bad things, which helps because I watch bad things. Handshakers.
Let's see. Meta Knight wants to know if classic reviews sticking around. Originally, no, they were not.
I mean, not permanently.
Because we didn't think that we had enough space in our production schedule for it.
Right, but it did well last season.
Yeah, they did great last season.
By shifting like to a poll where we directly asked people and like made sure it was available and stuff like that and had it up on a specific day. And, you know, all that stuff was, made it so that classic streaming was successful this time.
Yeah.
And we were going to, like, maybe put a pause on it, but should I just announce this one?
Yeah, you can. Sure, go ahead.
So I'm not doing daily streaming reviews for this season. Other people are – we actually hired another reviewer just to cover the bulk, and all the rest of our reviewers are taking on all their shows. I am going to be reviewing episode by episode, except in some cases combining two episodes because it's an old show and,
every week you'll be reviewing two.
Every week you'll be reviewing two, yeah. I'm not sure I can manage that. It'll occasionally have to be
one. We'll work out the kinks, but right now the plan is to do two a week, but we'll work it out.
Two or one a week, depending on what part of the show is. But it is the 20th anniversary of Revolutionary Girl Utena, so I will be writing about that show every week, and I will be writing about it in a way. It's like, here's Utena basics. Like, here is what the show is saying in the most basic way. It's not intimidating. It's not scary. It is, anybody can enjoy it. And here's basically what the show is, and, in a fun, frothy way, and so it's going to be weekly classic Utena streaming reviews.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I'm looking forward to reading that. Mm-hmm. We were going to do a podcast, but I guess you'll do that instead.
Yeah. Well.
Cool. Mm-hmm. Sounds good. All right. Okay. All right. That does it for us. I'm excited about all that stuff. We got a lot of stuff coming up. Please read Vice and Luna at the comics on the site. We're wrapping up a storyline next week, and then we're starting another one a couple of weeks after that. I put a lot of time into that to try and make it a little bit stronger. So check it out if you have a chance. All right. Thanks a lot, guys. Don't forget. Wait. There's an exact closing I got to do. Okay, that's our show. Big thanks to Jacob in the chat for stopping by. The theme song is Bucharest. It's by the band The New Division. You can check them out at newdivisionmusic.com. Don't forget, subscribe to us on iTunes, Google Play Music, Stitcher Radio, all that stuff. YouTube, subscribe to us on YouTube. Leave us a rating or a review. We'd really appreciate it. And we will see you all next week.
All right.
Okay, that's our show. Big thanks to the chat for stopping by. The theme song is Bucharest. It's by the band The New Division. You can check them out at newdivisionmusic.com. Don't forget, subscribe to us on iTunes. Leave us a rating, a review. We'd really appreciate it. Also, subscribe to us on YouTube. We'd appreciate that, too. See you all next week.